This is Stacey Creamer, Broadway's editor-in-chief, here with Paul Schaefer to talk about his book, We'll Be Here for the Rest of Our Lives. Paul, what does that title mean?
Well, the title is explained in the book. It's the first story in the book. We'll be here for the rest of our lives. You know, when I was first getting started in show business, I was in Toronto. I started in Toronto. I graduated from the university up there. And I started playing around town, whatever kind of gigs I could get. Bar mitzvahs, weddings, topless, show bars. This title refers to an engagement that I fulfilled at a topless lounge on Yonge Street in Toronto called the Brass Rail. It wasn't exactly, you know, a gentleman's club where the bouncers wear tuxes the way they have today. It was a little bit of, well, let's say that the dancers, lovely as they were a touch frayed around the G-strings. You know, they weren't class A. These girls had been around. Nonetheless, I was the master of ceremonies as well as a piano player, and I would, part of my job would be to introduce them. Ladies and gentlemen, please, the lovely and talented ladies of the Brass Whale, topless go-go club. And I would bring them on that way. Now, it was a sort of a dual kind of vibe for me because, you know, I was a 21-year-old kid. Mm. It's kind of exciting to be playing in a club like that, you know. All my friends came down to see me, all my college buddies. It was an excuse for them to come to a topless club. But at the end of the night, you know, here I am, and I'm wrapping it up, and I got to play to the peanut gallery. You know, here's all my friends. So I'm looking right at them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a wonderful evening, but it's time to go. One more time, let me hear it for the lovely and talented ladies. We'll be back tomorrow night. Come back and see us. We'll be here for the rest of our lives. My group today on the Letterman Show is still pretty much based on that group. Once I started playing Louie Louie, you know, on Letterman, I said, it's the same, you know, I'm playing the same tunes. I'm just as likely to be playing for an acrobat one day, a comic the next day, Bruce Springsteen the third day, you know, and a stripper the fourth day. So in all actuality, we will be here for the rest of our lives.
And why did you set out to write the book?
I started to notice that people were interested in different things that I have gotten to observe. I have had a very lucky run with my career. One minute I'm in Toronto, you know, playing for strippers. The next minute I'm on Broadway, playing in the Magic Show with Doug Henning. A second after that, I'm on the very beginning of Saturday Night Live, you know, as Lorne and the whole original crew with Chevy and Gilda and Danny, John Belushi, putting it all together. And a lot of people, you know, what was that like? You were right there. And as I tell some of the stories, I notice that people are interested. Cut to, I'm in Hollywood doing a situation comedy in 1977 called The Year at the Top with Norman Lear. What was that like? You know, I got a lot of stories to tell about that. Next thing I know, I'm 1982, and it's the beginning of the David Letterman Show. First show to take the Johnny Carson-style format and open it up with the help of what Steve Allen did, you know, open it up, take it out to the street. David jumps into a vat of water, addresses a tablet of Alka-Seltzer. What was that like, you know? So I just noticed that, hey, I've had a ringside seat at a lot of critical times when a lot of cool things went down. And I just thought there might be an audience for my angle on these things.
I think there definitely is. And you mentioned some of the people, but who are the main characters in this book besides yourself?
Well, you know, we start off with my mom and dad, who were very wonderful people up in a little town of Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Yet my parents were very, very cosmopolitan. You know, the martinis must be ice cold with the exact proportion of beefeater gin to Nolly Pat vermouth, Nolly Pratt, excuse me. My mother would kill me. You know? And they knew so much about show business even then. And you get a sort of a idea of why I came out skewed. Then you see me in Toronto with the under belly of the Toronto jazz subculture. Mm-hmm. Then you see me in New York with Gilda, who was a dear friend from my days in Toronto. We met in Toronto in a show called Godspell. We cover that show a little bit. It's a little bit legendary, our company up in Toronto, because it included not only Gilda, but Martin Short, Eugene Levy, Victor Garber, Andrea Martin, the funniest chick, I think. We all learned how to be funny from her. Yeah, it was an incredible cast, just a confluence of talent that I thought, you know, when I get to New York, this is nothing. Wait till I get to New York, it's going to be all this. But it wasn't. I mean, this was some talented kids that, you know, you don't run into every day. Yeah. So they are the main characters. Marty Short, still my best friend. Gilda and our relationship. Then getting to New York, John Belushi. Dan Aykroyd. I was musical director of the Blues Brothers. I helped them put together that band. You see the recording of the first album that went quadruple platinum. You read about the movie of the Blues Brothers and why I did not make it into the movie and how rough that was. Then you get a little insight into my relationship with Belushi. Volatile, to say the least. Then you see Norman Lear and what he was like. Don Kirshner, who I used to impersonate on Saturday Night Live. He was truly one of the funniest characters I had met up to that time. And we talk a little bit. And he was co-producer with Norman Lear on this little sitcom, Year at the Top. So you get a little bit of Kirshner on and off camera, two different guys. Then I meet my idol, the guy who really may have been responsible for my going into show business in the first place, the great Phil Spector, who made, you know, the Ronettes records, who made the Righteous Brothers records, and a character, to say the least. You're with us as we haunt the jazz clubs of New York City and, you know, what he's like, how he plays me, how I play him. He's a major character. And then, of course, David Letterman himself, when we get to the Letterman show, what my relationship with him is like. What it was like going overseas with him to Afghanistan on Christmas Eve, then Baghdad Christmas Eve, 2 years in a row. What that was like, driving over there in a chartered plane, transferring to a military aircraft, traveling right into the heart of the conflict in Iraq. What that was like. There is a varied list of characters, and I learned a little bit from all of them.
We'd love a preview. What's the funniest story in the book?
It was in between Saturday Night Live and the Letterman Show. And I was working as a piano player in the recording studios of New York. And you hear a little bit about that in the book, too. I worked quite a bit with Barry Manilow. I played on a number of his early hits. I was going from session to session. I got wind of the fact that Diana Ross was coming to town to record and that she was going to use me on a few tracks. And boy, did I ever want to stay. But my girlfriend, Kathy, who is now my sainted wife, said, I'm tired of New York. Take me to Hawaii. So we go. Screw Diana Ross. I ended up getting to play for her anyway, which was great. But we go to Hawaii, and the first night there, we go to see the magnificent Mr. Don Ho. He was like the Dean Martin of Hawaii,
absolutely,
except even more laid back. He was, you know, I don't know what he was on, but he was, this man was relaxed. And he is sitting in this big wicker chair playing a little Hammond chord organ, and every song's the same. Honolulu, my Hawaii. Except he doesn't even have to sing a whole song anymore. He's so cool that he'll sing three lines. My Hawaiian home. And then a good-looking Hawaiian guy will come over, take the mic from him, and finish the song. He's Don Ho. He's so relaxed. He doesn't even have to finish.
He's farting it out.
Doesn't even have to finish a whole song, you know? Then I notice that he's singing a song, My Honolulu. Every song is the same. And a woman gets out of the audience. I've never seen anything like this before. She gets right out of the audience, walks right up on stage, and he's singing My Hawaiian. And he just, in the middle of a word, leans back, pulls the woman's head in, and gives her a serious, soulful kiss. Right in the middle of the song. She gets down to her seat, and then it's a free-for-all. Women of all shapes and sizes are getting up on stage and he reaches up and pulls him in and kisses him. While he's kissing them, there's a picture taken.
Uh-huh.
This picture becomes available to them at the end of the evening.
$25.99.
Yeah. The end of the show comes. The good-looking Hawaiian guys and gals leave the stage. He doesn't leave.
Yeah.
He stays seated at the organ while the women line up with their pictures for him to autograph.
Man.
Each time he autographs a picture, he pulls one in and he kisses them again. Another shot is taken, and for another $25.99, you can come back the next day and get it. So my wife, Kathy, picks up a Don Ho Honolulu bobblehead doll, buys it for about $50. And she says, I wonder if he'd autograph this. I said, get in line, you know. So she stands in line with the women. He autographs the thing, pulls her close,
gives her
a kiss that lasts. I mean, I'm timing it now, you know. It's like a minute and a half kiss.
My gosh.
And I'm thrilled, you know. I can hardly wait till she comes off stage. And I said, what was it like? She says, well, he was kind of clammy. I said, was there any tongue? She says, you bet your ass. So she came into our marriage with a little experience
that I was not expecting
her to have. Well, we planned to go back the next day to buy the picture, but we got into a little accident, a serious accident the very second day in Honolulu.
Oh, wow.
And I run this down, too. You know, I make the best of it.
Yeah.
I almost didn't. It took me 3 years to recover from this thing.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, during in year number two of my recovery, that's when I get the call from Letterman, come in, and I'd like to interview for the job of musical director of my show. And ever since then, he said, you know, when you came in, I knew there was something weird about you. Well, what was weird about me is I had 9 broken ribs and, you know, my whole show had a collapsed lung and I could barely walk.
Oh,
but
ribs.
Dave, we're going to have a great time.
Oh, man.
And that's how I got hired
and
for the Letterman
show. Job.
Yeah, I got the
that's
job.
That's pretty
anyway.
Good. That's yeah. pretty good. Well, Paul, thank you so much. And we can't wait to read your book.
I can't wait for you to read it.